This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us from Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And Hiller Moore is our guest. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Much to talk about with the district attorney who's just been elected to a third term without opposition. 6 years. Obviously, people, they're either satisfied with your work or they just didn't bother to run. But either way, I'm sure you're pleased that you don't have a campaign to run right now.
Yeah, we have so much going on right now. Really good that we can just stay at work, get to work, and not have to worry about campaigning. But I was looking forward to it, hearing other people's voices and ideas and learning more. But we'll continue to do the same. Hope to meet with the staff and others around the community to ask, what can we do better? How can we better serve people? Are there things that need to be changed? A lot of things going on mm-hmm. now.
Well, here are some numbers right now in East Baton Rouge Parish. 354 people have died of COVID-19 in the largest parish in the state. But opioid deaths, let's start there. Last count, 354, mind you, for COVID-19. How many through right now that we know of who've died of opioid overuse?
So, unfortunately, the number is huge. It's 140 that we know of for sure. But as you know, there's a backlog on testing of samples from people who do die that we expect that they have died from, suspect that they died from that type of overdose. So the number is higher than that. It's north of that. Last year, we had a very high year. The total for the whole year was 120. And we are now at least 140.
140.
So we're going to probably double last year's numbers. And when you do look at that compared to the deaths of COVID in Baton Rouge, I mean, it puts it all in perspective. But also compare homicide numbers. When you know, we can speak about that, on our worst year ever, I think we hit 103, which was not that long ago. But so that number is staggering for us.
But 140 opioid deaths, which means we could double last year's total, which was a record total, I believe, of 120. So we have a real problem there that's not getting the attention it ordinarily would because of the COVID situation. But you look at 140 deaths from opioid overuse or misuse, whatever you want to call it, and 354 deaths from COVID-19. That's a substantial percentage. And then 64 homicides at last count. Is that the correct number?
Correct. That does not include negligent homicides. But, yes, 64 is actual uniform crime reporting numbers.
64, which puts us right there on a per capita basis with the most violent cities in America. And what do you attribute it to?
This year, I believe that I attribute it to mainly two summers because of COVID. When March 15th, came and we went into somewhat seclusion. Police are having to draw back a little bit. We're not putting people in jail for all offenses, only the violent offenses. People are out of school. Kids mm-hmm. are out of school. A lot of time on people's hands. I think that we've had two summers. Our summer normally starts around June, and we see the numbers always go up June through August. But this time we've seen the numbers start in March, and they went up. And so I think that we're now in our second summer, and we're seeing the numbers right now.
Well, with the jails in peril because of coronavirus, are there fewer arrests?
Yes.
Does that make a difference?
Some would argue that it does not, but I think that it does to some extent. I do believe there's things that we're learning from COVID and not arresting as many people for particular types of crimes. That's yet to be seen, but I mean, the police are working hard. They're stretched yeah. thin, and they're all over the
well,
place.
Well, and let's be sure here to let people know that if you commit a murder or accused of a murder, you're going to be arrested. That's not going to go by the wayside.
Basically, we're trying to balance the arrest and who's going to be incarcerated because you know that we have a high number of people that can catch the disease. The COVID in prison, being close quarter like that. But I'll tell you, my hats are off to the sheriff and to the warden at the prison and the medical staff. They've kept that number down extremely low. And I'm really proud of the work that they've done and the work that the courts, the public defender have done, and the DA to mm-hmm. get people in and out as quickly as we can.
So some sobering numbers, independent of the COVID-19 numbers, which are extreme. Louisiana, as we know, on a per capita basis, has one of the highest death rates in America. And then when you get to East Baton Rouge Parish, which is the largest parish in the state, we're number three, in the number of deaths. Orleans, 562, Jefferson, 529, and East Baton Rouge, 354. And when we look at the homicides, Hiller Moore, you have been a champion for combating domestic violence, and I understand that of those 64, a good percentage involved domestic violence.
Yeah, again, unfortunately, when March 15th, when we had our press conference with the mayor, the sheriff, the judges, et cetera, we warned everyone to be careful that we believe that we could replicate what happened after the flood in 2016, where we had a lot of issues going on in the community. Following that, we saw 14 domestic violence homicides, and this year, in fact, we're at 14 intimate partner or domestic violence-related homicides already this year, and that's again a big number.
And that has to be in some way related to COVID-19. As we talked, people are spending more time together, and sometimes familiarity doesn't breed content.
Well, the home is you're supposed to be safe in your home, but obviously it's just the opposite, that you're not. When you're now at home, you can't reach out to others safely. You're not going to work. Teachers are not seeing students at school. We've seen children that are abused more. So if a lady is at home, she's being abused, she normally would go to work. People would see bruises or telltale signs. And now that, or previously to just recent, people have not been able to do that. And so you're stuck at home with your abuser and with no lifeline out.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. You can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Hiller Moore, just elected to a third 6-year term as the Baton Rouge District Attorney, is here to talk with us. And, of course, it was thought he would have an opponent. I think you thought you would, but you did not. And you have a job that involves combating crime in a violent city. And how are your resources? What kind of resources do you have that you feel are adequate or not adequate to do your job?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked. It is the biggest struggle that the office faces now. We're not alone. Other departments are probably the same. We're probably at our lowest staffing ever, particularly for assistant DAs that are in court every day. Mm-hmm. In some courts, the public defender has more folks than we do lawyer-wise. So it is an issue for us. Funding is a big issue. Attracting people is not a problem. We have people that want to work and want to do the job. This is a lot of work. It's a lot of stress, and we have to find ways to fund our office better.
Well, you are a person who the conventional wisdom was that if you had run for mayor, perhaps this time and at other times, you would have won. Why did you not choose to go that route?
I love the job that I have. I love the people I work with and the people of the community I serve. It's a challenging job, particularly now with criminal justice at the forefront of everything that we're doing. All types of reform. I'd rather be in this job than any other job in the state.
It's a tough job, though, and you're at most of these murder scenes. I would suspect of the 64, you've been probably to 90% of them.
Try to go to as many as you can, depending on what's happening at the time of the homicide as well. it's good for the community. You get to see people that live in the neighborhood and talk to them. You get to talk to the police officers out of there, get a better understanding of what happened. Because, as you know, these murder trials cases take a long time to go to trial. In fact, we have around 130 murders that are pending in some form or fashion. And then, you know, COVID hit, and that really slowed us down again. So we're really backlogged.
Well, a listener asked, this is Holly in the Garden District, about the resolution of these cases. How often are they resolved where you feel like you got the person who did it and they end up going to jail?
Good question. You know, a lot of the murders are there's just never an arrest, although the numbers have been better for clearing these cases. But oftentimes when someone is arrested, they're arrested based on probable cause. And then once we move to a grand jury setting, then particularly to court, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. And our burden is substantial. And as you know, now it's a 12-0 verdict. So it's hard to.
Yeah. And that's another question. Are you going to have to retry all those cases?
So we'll have to retry around 20 cases from the Ramos decision maybe a little bit less than that, which is a problem in itself because it's now added another 20 murders to 130 that I have. There's also another case on appeal where there's some appeals that are on some collateral attack that could potentially send back to Louisiana hundreds of cases, non-murder, but very serious cases that you may have to retry, trying to find witnesses, evidence, again, to retry those on already
sometimes
strapped.
A long time has passed.
A long time has passed, and so it's going to be a lot of stress added to the system that's already overly stressed.
Do you have a number of prosecutors to take care of this?
There's no chance we have that to keep up, but we will. We'll have to find a way to do it.
877-217-5757. Hill or Moore in the house for a while longer, the district attorney, New Orleans native who came to Baton Rouge and took the town by storm and is doing a tough job in a tough time. And we'll return after this 90-second pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. For Hill or Moore, the district attorney, always on the ready to talk about anything on your mind. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And Rachel in Mid-City notes that today's the 68th birthday of one Melvin Kip Holden, who served our city as mayor for a dozen years. He's battling some issues right now, but we wish him well.
Sure do. I haven't seen Kip in a while. I sure miss him.
Yeah. And John Ed Bradley, the great LSU football player turned writer, wrote the definitive book about LSU football, It Never Rains in Tiger Stadium, 62 years old today. And we wish him well.
He missed that Miami-Ohio game. It was just stormed that day. I remember that one.
I think that was a little later, but he was on the team in 79, and talk about how the schedule has changed with non-conference teams, for the most part, being patsies. But in 79, they played USC and Florida State in the same season, and also had Alabama at home, and those were three of the top five teams in the country, and they were all close games, all close losses for LSU, and the USC games won for the ages. And yep. Your neighbor, Aaron Nola. Wow. He's off to a good start this year for the Phillies.
Man, he has a watch team on my phone through an app the other day. He struck out 12 in five innings. He didn't get the win. He just got the
no decision.
He
did win Monday night. He left with a 13-1 lead, and the Phillies almost lost the game.
I called his dad that night. I said, "I guess you can sleep well." He says, "No chance. I'll stay up all night and watch the whole game because you never know." And you woke up the next morning, it was close.
877-217-5757. Tom in Woodland Ridge. Tom, you're on with Hill or Moore. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Moore. Mr. Moore, I'm wondering if you're aware of or if there have been discussions about the reopening of court, particularly jury trials, and how the safety of the jury will be addressed during these COVID times.
Hey, Tom, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. So I'll start with the grand jury. So the grand jury has now been meeting for a month. We have special precautions and plans that are in place for them. It has worked out extremely well. I want to thank the grand jurors, the two grand jurors that we have. They've been champs. They've been coming, wanting to come get back to work, and we've made it safe for them. So that's worked. We're in our third jury week once juries were allowed to come back again, I believe third, and all 3 weeks have been canceled for one reason or the other. I think this week or last week's case was canceled. We're trying to do one a week right now to start, and it was canceled because the defendant was diagnosed with COVID. We believe that we will have our first jury trial Monday coming, a domestic violence case that we need to get tried. So we think it's going to start then. The plan is, we've met with the judges and the public defender and the clerk of court. We're going to pick the jury down in the jury assembly room, which is extremely large. All of the jurors will have a lapel mic where they'll be able to answer questions. We won't have to pass the microphone around. Once the jury is selected, they'll be brought up to the ceremonial court on the 11th floor, where we can space everyone out. And so everyone will be safe. And so it's been a lot of work, and hopefully we'll get it done Monday.
Thank you, Tom. And there has to be a backlog.
Yes.
Huge. Shannon asks, is there any special attention being paid to homicides involving trans people? She writes, I believe there have been 4 homicides this year involving black trans women. Is that right?
I don't. Not, my memory fades on that. I'm not sure if there's, that number is actually correct. But I remember someone emailing me a question about that, and I think the information was not completely accurate, but surely that type of murder mm-hmm. is at risk, a high risk, and so it's surely ones that we pay attention to. But I don't think that the numbers have been alarming at this point. I know of maybe one or two, to my knowledge, maybe not four, but I could be wrong.
All right. And Jessica, in Goodwood, I think this came up last time you were with us. I believe it was after this, but the protests at your house, yeah. That was not a pleasant moment, but you handled it with good cheer. Were you gritting yeah. your teeth when you did it?
No. I happened not to be home. A family had planned to go to dinner that night for our birthday parties and just were not there. It's not something you like to have in the front of your house or your neighborhood for your neighbors and family. But they were respectful. They were a peaceful assembly, and I respected what they did.
They didn't mess up your garden, did they?
No, they didn't come close enough to it. But one did get offended. Someone did post that his garden looked like, the other word. So I was offended by that. But
you take great pride in that.
Absolutely,
that's your pride and joy.
If they would have picked one of those peppers and put it in their mouth, they'd. I think they're at Thai Kitchen in the hottest kitchen that they could ever be in. I'm glad they didn't do that.
877-217-5757. Here's another inquiry from a listener. This is Whitney asking about the technology that you've discussed on this show where you can determine shots fired. Has that advanced? How's it going?
We have a meeting with the ShotSpotter representatives, I believe, next week by Zoom to look at our coverage that we have now. Unfortunately, Whitney, for the entire mileage that we have in Baton Rouge, square miles, we only have 9 to 12 square miles of ShotSpotter coverage. It's covered by a square mile where things are triangulated, and you're able to tell shots that are fired immediately and then respond to those very quickly. It also it draws a circle around where the shell casings should be from that shooting so that we can search that area. But, again, we have very few miles for the coverage that we really need.
And unfortunately,
it's $80,000 a square mile per year.
Really?
Yes.
And there are a lot of shots fired.
Around 4,000 or so that we probably know of, at least per year.
4,000, and we're talking 64 homicides. So every time a shot is fired, somebody's not getting shot. But
absolutely.
Still, that's a lot of shots.
A lot of shots, and I think you and I have talked about this before. The biggest indicator of how you're doing as a city, violence-wise, is not necessarily homicides, because that means you have a lucky shot or good shot. A long way from a hospital, it's non-fatal shootings. We have to look at the non-fatals just as you do homicides.
Well, you're on the job and started many years ago investigating these sorts of things. This is something you've been devoted yeah. your life to. You haven't burned out yet.
No, it's every day I look forward to coming to work with the men and women at the district attorney's office and all the other agencies, the people we serve.
877-217-5757, Matt on O'Neill. Matt, you're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning to you.
Hi, Mr. Moore.
Hey, Matt.
I have a question about the changes in the increase in crime and offenses and stuff. Do you think that enforcement of a lot of the municipal codes concerning what some would call beautification, but they're really concerned rubbish, blight, and things like that, if those things were enforced, it would clean up the places and maybe people would react a little bit different and behave different?
Matt, excellent question. There's a lot of research on the points that you bring up that is changing the structure of how we do things and how the city is laid out and how neighborhoods or how property is kept is a big issue, and it does relate directly to crime. In fact, we had an investigator who did work mm-hmm. as a PhD at LSU, master's student at LSU, did a blighted property study, and I think he found that 40% of all crimes of violence are committed within 50 feet or yards of a mm-hmm. blighted property. So it does go hand in hand, and that is something that we need to pay much more attention to.
877-217-5757. We're going to a break shortly, but we will keep Hiller with us for a few more minutes, the DA for East Baton Rouge Parish. And a listener notes that Kamala Harris named the Democratic vice presidential nominee yesterday. She is the former DA in San Francisco. In fact, she was DA there when Hiller Moore first took his post in Baton Rouge. And I just pulled it up. San Francisco last year had 41 killings.
Yep.
And there, now the city of San Francisco, this is not metro area, it's about twice the size of Baton Rouge, I think, the city itself. So they had 41 and we had...
Last year we had 83 total.
83. So we're talking four times the number of deaths by population probably. There are a lot of reasons for that, but what do you think the biggest reason is?
Just the resource. We're not able to get to these young people early enough and just surround them with all the help that they need.
Education.
And absolutely is a big, big part of it. And, yes.
Okay. 877-217-5757. We will return for a few more minutes with Hiller Moore, reelected DA without an opponent. It's another 6 years of good radio. And we'll be back after this pause for the news on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. A bit more time with Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish. Your number is 877-217-5757. And, of course, you can reach us by email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Now, Hiller Moore, like the rest of us, is waiting to see what will happen with football. And before we get to this season, if it occurs, former LSU player, big part of the 2011 team that almost won the national title, Tyrann Mathieu. He's a guy who had some problems when he was here, but he's become a great pro player, as we know, and he's doing some good things in our community.
No doubt. This is a guy that I knew when he was not where he is now. He has grown up. He's an outstanding young man, father, and now he wants to give back to the community, the people that he's seen and maybe grown up with. His dad's doing serving life at in a prison here for murder out of New Orleans. He is also working in the prison to help others, kids that come in through the prison system. And Tyrann is now helping us with our truce program where we're trying to identify those kids who are most at risk to kill or be killed. And Tyrann hosts a show every 2 weeks called The Shift where these young kids are able to come in by Zoom. And we had 23 of them last week. And these are the kids that we've identified. They speak with Tyrann about issues. And Tyrann hits them head on. He's fantastic. I think ESPN is doing a story on Tyrann and part of the shift. And we're looking forward to continue to work with him to hopefully stop some of these kids from winding up as a killer or being killed.
He went to St. Aug in New Orleans, didn't he? I believe he did.
I believe so.
Yeah. And, of course, you're a product of the Catholic school system.
Two blocks away.
New Orleans. And you went to Brother Martin, Leeson Fields.
Yes.
Understand they used to have some brawls in the cemetery.
Sure did. Some NBA basketball players that are not playing anymore used to.
Rick Roby, who hightailed it to the University of Kentucky.
Yeah.
He chose Joe B. Hall over Dale D. Brown, but LSU beat Roby in Roby's senior year at Kentucky. Kentucky ended up winning the national title, though, so they did pretty good. And Rick now lives in, I think, Lexington, Kentucky. And I'm sure he stands out. He was about 7 feet tall. Parade All-American. He was something.
It was a great team that Brother Martin had that year.
Yeah, he won state title. Yeah. And Hiller was a noted rugby player. You've talked about how rugby shaped much of your life. What influence did being on the rugby team have for you?
Just a lot of work, getting beat up and hopefully trying to beat up others and dishing it out and getting back to you. Just a lot of good friends, a lot of family, a lot of hard work, just discipline.
And your brothers also?
All of them, yes.
All of them. Ike Jackson says, please ask Hiller whether he shares Ike's view that because of legislative inactivity, our DAs and city attorneys must now institute policies ensuring that, I'm trying to read the rest of this, that long email. Must institute policies assuring that they're also made known of oil, gas, petrochemical industry violations of public health.
Yeah, Ike is, I graduated law school together from Southern Law Center. He's an extremely bright man. He surely is very knowledgeable about the topics that he's talking about. It's a very complicated issue that he brings to the public, and it's ones that he surely writes on a lot, but there are a lot of issues that involving that.
Well, I mentioned Kamala Harris, former prosecutor. She not only was DA in San Francisco, of course, she was attorney general in California and received $6,000 for her campaigns from one Donald John Trump. She's now running to try to beat him. But it is rare that a prosecutor gets to this level of American politics, and now she is ironically being criticized for being tough on crime. What do you think?
Well, it depends on which article you read or which news article you get. Either they're blaming her for being a prosecutor or blaming her for backing off of someone. It's very difficult. But I think that I thought we had one other president was either a police or a prosecutor. I'm forgetting now the name. But she's a very bright lady. She's written a lot. She's implemented a lot of policies when she was there. So I think you'll see a lot of her through the campaign about criminal justice reform, and we'll just have to wait and see.
All right. Well, Hillary Moore, thanks for all you do, and keep on going.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Jim.
And I'm sure you got a lot of years left.
Yeah, we'll be back.
It's that rugby. It's kept you in shape, even though you got a few metal plates in your body to show for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I creak a little bit every now and then.
The leg in particular, right?
The hip and leg, yes.
Well, did you break your hip, too?
No, I had it replaced because of the broken legs.
Really?
Yes.
That messed you up, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're moving pretty well, so keep on doing it. Thank you, Hiller.
Thanks
Take
again.
Care.
Take care.
And we're about to switch gears and hear about the Louisiana Film Channel. But before we get there, of course, yesterday was a historic day in our country. Kamala Harris, the daughter of two immigrants, one from India, one from Jamaica, former Attorney General for the great state of California, now U.S. Senator in that state, the second African-American female to be elected to the United States Senate. She came after Carol Moseley Braun of Illinois. She is now the running mate of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. and Joe Biden, who is going to be the oldest president, if he wins, to ever serve the day he takes office at 77, has a 55-year-old running mate in Kamala Harris, the senator from the great state of California. And we'll see how it goes. Right now, polls show Joe Biden in front, and the election is getting close. We're 83 days away from the finish line, but much can happen, as we know, in 12 weeks, and that's where we are right now, and we will follow it every step of the way.